Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
And welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. For many survivors of the Wine Country or Campfire, the announcement that the PG&E Fire Victim Trust will soon begin to pay out emergency payments of up to $25,000 to those who lost property or suffered injuries in wildfires has been a long time coming. The trust was created to disperse the $13.5 billion PG&E must pay wildfire claims after the utility's bankruptcy. We'll get the latest on efforts of fire victims to get financial help and hear why it's still not too late to file a claim. Joining us is Lily Jamali, co-host and correspondent for KQED's The California Report. Welcome, Lily.
Hi, Michael.
Hi. Good to have you. Also good to have Kathy Yawney with us, claims administrator for the Fire Victim Trust. Welcome, Kathy Yawney.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Lily.
Glad to have you both aboard here. And let me begin, Lily, with you. Where do things stand now with the trustees earlier this month ordering these emergency payments of $25,000? This is kind of a first-round down payment, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. This money is part of a settlement between PG&E and fire victims. So the PG&E funded this trust a couple of months ago as they emerged from bankruptcy, and half of it is cash, half of it is in PG&E stock. And at this point, you know, these are short-term, what the trustee has called humanitarian payments for fire victims who need the money now. They're going to be distributing up to $25,000 for now towards whatever the final value the trust determines is owed to folks. And, you know, people do need this money now. 2 years after the Camp Fire, we're 3 years after the North Bay fires. There are still a lot of people in dire circumstances, living, in temporary quarters. They're fighting with their insurance companies in some cases. And so not everyone has been able to rebuild or move into a new place and move on.
Well, if anything, the pandemic has just made things all that much more harsh and exacerbated things. But it hasn't. It's my understanding that the judge has granted some exemptions to some to appeal, but just really a limited few.
Yes. In the final weeks of the bankruptcy, there was this hearing in which a handful of people, I think it might have been three or four families, actually, sort of by a fluke, secured the ability to appeal if they don't like what the trust gives them as part of the settlement, to appeal to an outside court. Everyone else, I think it's up to 80,000 people, will have to, appeal within the trust system. They will not be able to seek outside, judiciary review. And one of the controversies there was that one of those families happens to be the mom in that family, that the wife is a bankruptcy lawyer who happens to represent one of the hedge funds in this case that was negotiating against fire survivors.
And you've been talking to a lot of these fire survivors. What questions are foremost in their minds, have you found?
I mean, the big one is always, when is this money going to get dispersed? And, I think the trust has a really complicated task because of the fact that half of the money was funded in the form of PG&E stock. So they don't have a finite amount that they're dealing with here. And it's, by the way, for folks who are interested in bankruptcy and how it works, this is a very unusual circumstance. I've only come across one other circumstance where a trust for tort victims was funded with stock. And what it does is it means that the trust doesn't have a finite number of dollars in it. Every, on a given day when PG&E stock goes up or down, the value of the trust goes up by $500 million or down by $500 million. So I imagine it must be a very difficult task. And I imagine that that's why they tried to, speed up the timeline to at least get a little bit of money into people's hands quickly. The other question I get a lot is about lawyers' fees, because during the course of the bankruptcy, I think a lot of people ended up pretty disillusioned with some of the lawyers, not all of them, but some of the lawyers in the case. There's been concern about, having to hand over a large chunk of their final settlement money to lawyers. Some are charging, 33% plus expenses, others less. But, you know, we at KQED have reported on one particular lawyer who signed up more clients than any other in the case, taking funds from hedge funds, pitted against survivors in this case. So there is some mistrust there. But again, you know, it really depends on the individual lawyers, and different people have had different experiences there.
Yeah, and you mentioned the total amount of money. It was $13.5 billion. It's already, in terms of stocks, it's already not performed well enough to been reduced to about 11.2. That's the latest reading, at least, that I had. Lily Jamali with us from the California Report. And we're going to talk to Kathy Yawney of the Fire Victims Trust. But first, we wanted to bring in someone who has been through, well, the fires, Cheryl Maynard, who is who lost her condo back in 2018 in the Paradise Fire. And Cheryl Maynard, good to have you. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Well, tell us your story. I know you had a place you were very happy with, and now you're in a place you're not too happy with. And what's been the difficulty in terms of getting money?
It's been very challenging. I thought I had great insurance with State Farm. I found out I didn't have great insurance. I had $20,000 in contents and $20,000 in structure. And I'd been with State Farm for 35 years. So that was a rude awakening.
Yeah, rude awakening and a very frustrating one, I must say. But if you would have had the PG&E money, it would have made a big deal of difference in terms of the timing here and what you could have done?
Huge, huge difference, because I was just kicked out of my home. My State Farm insurance was paying for my living arrangements up to November 7th of this, just last week. And if I would have had more money from the trust sooner. I did have HOA insurance that I wasn't aware of, so that gave me a certain amount of money as well. And if I would have had more money, I wouldn't have ended up in a mobile home with dirty carpet, dirty walls. I was not living at this quality of life before. I'm grateful I have a roof. I know of people that are squatting on land in Paradise in the dirt, where they were renting from former landlords, and now they're just living in the dirt there. I know I've heard of people, because my friend still lives there. I've heard of people that can't afford to rebuild, even though they owned homes, and they can't afford to rebuild in this current market. PG&E has made it impossible for us survivors to rebuild in the state of California, because they've caused so many fires. And the trust money would have helped me so much. If I had gotten it sooner, I may have been able to buy a condo down here if I would just had $25,000 to $40,000 more money.
Well, I wish you the best. I'm sorry for what you've been through, and I hope the money indeed does come through when you can move out of the mobile home, and which is not giving you the happiness, obviously, that you had before, back into a condo that suits you. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your being with us this morning. That's Cheryl Maynard, who lost her condo in the 2018 Paradise Fire. Let me bring Kathy Yawney into this, claims administrator with the Fire Victim Trust. And Kathy, first things first here, how do fire victims get this preliminary payment? What do they do?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And I'm very sympathetic to Cheryl's story. And the trust is doing everything we can to push out payments, which is why we're doing the preliminary payments. But it is a very difficult situation for all the fire survivors, for sure. So in order to obtain a preliminary payment, you need to have filed a claim in the bankruptcy. And as Lily referenced, there are 80,000 people and businesses who filed in the bankruptcy. And then you need to file a claim in the Fire Victims Trust. And once you file a claim in the Victims Trust, you need to give us information about your real property, your personal losses, and then most importantly, sign the claims questionnaire document under penalty of perjury. We are going to review every single claim we get. So we currently have about 40,000 people who've applied for payments from the trust, and we have about 5,000 folks who have submitted their claims and signed them, and we are currently reviewing them, and we are going to get payments out next week, the first group of payments.
And you're going to go through every claim to determine eligibility. I understand that.
Every single one.
What about people who need help in this whole process? You have a claim center with about 80 people at work here, and they can get free help through that?
Right. We have a claim center, and I can give you the phone number, 1-888- 664-1152. And they are open from 8 in the morning till 6 at night. They help people all day long, every day, both the people who are represented and unrepresented. And we have Spanish speakers. The documents are in Spanish. We're doing our absolute best to help people and try to make the process as smooth as possible.
And as long as you've been good enough to give your phone number, Kathy, I'll give ours, and I'll invite listeners to join us if you have questions for Kathy, or if you have questions in general about what we're discussing here, which is really the payments that PG&E is obliged by the law to give to those who have suffered, the survivors of fires, whether it's property loss or, for that matter, businesses. We do want to hear from you and hear what your questions and concerns are. You can call us now at our toll-free number. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Again, I'll repeat that. It's 866-733-6786. If you'd like to join the program, you can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you may have right now to forum@kqed.org. And let me just go back to you, Kathy, for a moment. Why should the trustee essentially be able to make decisions that fire survivors aren't allowed to appeal in a court?
The way the trust was formed, it is a standalone process funded by the settlement between PG&E, excuse me, and the claimants. And it is a standalone fund that is going to pay all the claimants. And because of that, there's the part of the agreement to create the trust was that we would have final authority over the claims. And that is not unusual for a trust at all. Or like in a mass tort, it's not unusual for a mass tort settlement to be the entity by which the claims get paid without an exit to the court system.
But again, if they do submit a claim, it has to be submitted under penalty of perjury with that step involved, right?
Correct.
Signing that document. You know, let me bring a caller on here. We've got Will, who joins us from Santa Rosa. Will, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thanks very much, and I really appreciate this discussion. I think it's really important for victims of the fires as well as the public to understand the implications here. And as a PG&E claimant, I'm concerned about the recent fires and the liability that PG&E might have associated with that. You know, there's been a recent CAL FIRE report indicating that PG&E caused the Kincade Fire. There's been a lot of questions and new evidence around the Zog fire and the Glass fire in terms of whether PG&E caused those fires, and just not trying to understand if investors make particular moves given that evidence, you know, where does that leave the victim's trust, and how are we tracking on that to make sure victims are receiving that $13.5 billion?
Yeah, thank you for that. And let me go back to you, if I may, on this, Lily Jamali. I mean, you've got people who, for example, a couple years after the Paradise Fire, survivors still waiting and wrangling with insurers. I mean, this can be extraordinarily frustrating. It must be really disheartening. Lily, can I go to you?
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, when the Zog fire, a couple of weeks ago, the PG&E filed some paperwork with the CPUC, basically telling regulators there that CAL FIRE was looking at its equipment and basically hinting that there was an investigation going on into potential involvement of PG&E equipment in causing that fire. And what was really interesting, that was on a Friday, the after-hours trading of the PG&E stock really went off a cliff for, you know, that afternoon, but by Monday it had rebounded. And the reason I bring that up is because I think that there may be a little bit of insulation of the stock happening because of AB 1054, which was this law that was passed last summer, and it was aimed at shoring up the investor-owned utilities across the state. Effectively, it creates an insurance fund for future fires. So there is that, you know, that insurance policy in place, if you will. It was very controversial among a lot of fire victims when it was passed. But I bring that up just because the Zog fire and other fires, you know, there's potentially other fires out there that PG&E will, you know, will be investigated for. This is a real issue when it comes to how this fund, this trust was funded. The fact that it was funded half in PG&E stock means that the fortunes of fire victims waiting to get, you know, any kind of recovery here is in part dependent on how PG&E as a company performs. And there's a lot of skepticism around this company, given, you know, the fact that earlier this year they pleaded guilty to manslaughter, 84 manslaughter charges for causing the camp fire. So there is that distrust, but in a way, this trust forces fire victims to wait and hope that PG&E performs well as a company.
Again, Lily Jamali is co-host and correspondent with KQED's A California Report, and Kathy Yanni is claims administrator with the Fire Victim Trust. Could you say something, Kathy, about what the trust needs from fire survivors or insurers, for that matter, that they're not getting or they haven't gotten yet, especially to move this process along?
Well, on behalf of the fire victims, we need them to submit their claims either themselves or with the lawyers who represent them. As I said, get the claims in, get them documented, and we're as an ongoing reviewing claims, and we can pay claims as soon as we roll them in the door. This first group of payments will go out before Thanksgiving. We're going to continue the preliminary payment program throughout this history of the trust. We will also begin giving out payments on in addition to the preliminary payments as soon as possible. So we are making payments starting next week, and we're going to continue to do that. And the commissioner, Laura, has requested the insurers extend the time for additional living expenses, which would definitely will help Cheryl, and also get people an extension of time in which to apply for code updates and also costs of repair.
Now, this is being termed and characterized as humanitarian money, but it's money certainly that's due and owed. And I want to bring another caller on. That's Alex. Alex, join us. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. There's a new requirement for Social Security numbers, and those of us that have lost everything and have had our credit ruined because of people scamming, this is kind of a strange thing to be asking from traumatized people. So I'm wondering what the rationale is behind this.
Why do you need a Social Security number, Kathy Yanni?
We ask for the Social Security number, and we use it as an identification. It's how we ID that you are the person that you say you are, or you're the person who owned the property. We did it in the wildfire assistance program. It's basically an identifier. And in the wildfire assistance program, we had 20,000 people apply for payments, and we had 20,000, maybe minus 10 Social Security numbers. But it's commonly done, and it helps us pay people quicker.
We've got seconds left. I want to get a final word from you, Lily Jamali. How do you think this process is going to unfold now that it's in kind of motion, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all watching very closely. I think the big question is, you know, at the end of all of this, how much will people end up recovering and over what period of time? Are they going to get 50 cents on the dollar over 5 years, or are they going to get full recovery here when all is said and done? And I did want to just piggyback off of something that Ms. Yanni said about the insurance commissioner asking insurance companies to extend living expenses. Unfortunately, that came just days after the 2-year mark of the campfire. So I think that a lot of people are wishing that determination or that letter would have come a little bit sooner. They were kind of stressed and forced into making decisions they might otherwise might not have.
Well, we will continue, obviously, to monitor this. I want to thank Lily Jamali of the California Report and Kathy Yanni of the Fire Victim Trust. And thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. Thank you for being a part of this morning's program. Please stay safe. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.